welcome to the Happy Dog Podcast. On this week's episode, we are tackling nipping and biting in puppies, which is probably one of the more frustrating behaviours that our new puppies display when we first get them. I'm back with Carla and Steph from Treetop Dogs, and we are going to delve into why they do it, why we are quite happy that they do it in some ways, and then the big one, how to make them stop. I hope you enjoy. Hello, ladies. How are you?
Okay, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. So today we're tackling our second probably most common issue that new owners have with their dogs, and that is nipping, biting, chewing, basically anything to do with those piranha teeth that they have when they are a little puppy, that hurt, that cause damage, that kind of catch you unawares and out of the blue.
Yes, and make holes in your arm and sleeves. And yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely think this is probably toilet training everyone's kind of prepared for. They're like, my puppy is going to toilet. I have to teach them to toilet outside. I think nipping and biting more so than chewing is a little bit of a shock to some people.
Yeah. And I think it catches people unawares. And then they almost start to be like, what did I do? Because it hurts and they make you bleed and it feels personal sometimes.
Yeah.
It does feel personal, doesn't it? It really does. It feels like they're attacking you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you've got like me who, you know, 10 years of puppy training, I have the thinnest skin ever. So if I go around to people's houses and I do puppy sessions with them, I'm like, I'm going to leave bleeding probably because my skin will just rip to shreds really quickly. So if I literally, but you know, when they catch your knuckle,
yeah,
and if they rip your knuckle, then it's just like, it just looks like more dramatic than it is, doesn't it? And I'm like, can you just give me a tissue? I'll just have my hand going.
I'm quite used to this.
Yeah, I'm very used to this.
Yeah, I think I'm the other way. I think I've got like wizened, hardened, gnarly skin from the number of like little puppy teeth marks or teaching leave it and having my hand gnawed and all of those things along over the years. So my skin's like, all right, fine, bring it on, puppy. What are you going to do?
Skin versus puppy.
Although I've had some where they've caught like underneath my nail with their teeth and like, you're trying to be really professional and be like, okay. And inside you just want to cry a little bit because it hurts so bad.
I went to go and see a puppy the other day. He's absolutely gorgeous, but he was on an absolute mouthing rampage, bless him. And he did catch my boob. I was like on the floor and it just straight in with those teeth right onto the boob. And I was like,
That brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, it hurt quite a lot actually, and he was mouthing hard too. But yes, that was fun.
That sounds fun.
It's hard. Like, I think teething out of everything is probably the hardest bit. Well, not hardest bit to get through, but it's one that feels the most personal and feels the hardest.
Yeah, because you like your patience wears quite thin when things hurt. When you're in pain, your frustration tolerance is a lot lower, and then their frustration tolerance is a lot lower, and it just feels like you're having a bit of a battle quite a lot of the time through this phase. And that's really normal. It's not nice, but it is, you know, it is a bit normal. But there's definitely something we can do.
Yes, definitely.
Because as well, like obviously you have this idea when you bring your puppy home, you're gonna like cuddle them and love them, and obviously they're cute and adorable and fluffy, and we're so hands-on and we're like, oh, I just want to love you. But puppies obviously got other ideas because their teeth are coming through and it hurts. So I think then our like fairy tale is almost, it's not shattered, but it's definitely like tainted, because there is this level of teething and biting that you probably weren't prepared for when you had your daydreams about what having a puppy would look like.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I do think saying that it is completely normal, I actually worry more if they're not exploring with their teeth in this way than if they are, because if they're not biting and chewing and nipping and using their mouth to learn about the world, it's almost like they've missed a bit of that development that they should have gone through. So yeah, it's horrible, it hurts, nobody likes it, but It shows that they're developing appropriately for their age and species and all of those things. So I think that that's the most important thing to get across is that it's okay. But like you say, we can stop it, we can reduce it, we can teach them a little bit of bite inhibition so that they can learn not to hurt quite so much with their little piranha teeth.
Yeah, I mean the other thing as well is that we're humans and we don't have this layer of fluff for the dogs to contend with. Well, some people have layer. Obviously,
Some people
layer.
do.
So actually, when they're when they're roughhousing and playing with their litter mates, which is what their socialization will likely have gotten to by the time they leave and go with their new family, they probably could be a little bit rougher with their litter mates, and then they get to human skin, which is going to be a bit more sensitive anyway, and they've got to learn a whole new way of interacting with the people or the whoever are around them. So it's a learning curve of how to be a little bit more gentler because of this delicateness of Auntie Carla's skin, especially compared to their litter mates, where they can be a little bit more rough and ready with them.
Yeah, there is that. They've been with dogs predominantly for 8 weeks, and now they're, unless you've got another dog in the household, they're just with humans and very different skin coverage compared to their litter mates. I do also think that I have quite tough hands, and so what hurts me is going to really hurt a child. So you do have to think about other people, or particularly older people with very thin paper skin, or just Carla, who is apparently already there.
Yes, God help me when I'm 80.
Yeah, just going to be shredding off. You put a cardigan on, it's just going to
Okay,
fall off.
wrap me in cotton wool.
We're just gonna have to get you like retired old gummy dogs, aren't we?
Gummy dogs. I've
Oh,
got horrible images in my
I
head,
see a
sorry.
gummy one.
I love it. I love it. But it is worth bearing in mind that a puppy biting is going to hurt different people in different ways. And so when we're talking about training and what we can do, I always talk about it being, it might not hurt you, but if it's hurting your child or if you're an elderly relative is coming round, we have to think about it for them more so than for us as we go. Okay, go on.
Say for kids as well, like they are generally more erratic. They are at the puppy's height a bit more, so they
Yeah.
are more likely, they are faster, they are louder, they are all of these things that are very exciting to puppies or a bit overwhelming to puppies. So yeah, they are also more likely to be in the firing line for nips and biting just purely because of how they behave.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you find, Kim, but I always say to people when I'm on the phone to them, I'm like, do you have children? And they're like, if they say yes, I'm like, is it your youngest that's getting the brunt of it? And they'll say, yep. Every time, it always is. It's hard because I get it. It's hard having kids and dogs at the same time, especially with puppies. But it always is management of child as much as it is of puppy. So that's something to keep in
Totally.
mind.
And I also think from a certain age, from kind of like 2 years up, you can teach and explain to a child much easier than you can to the dog that if they're biting, I want you to do this. And then coming or come and get me or shout for me and I will come and fix the problem. And it's much easier to try and get the youngster to do that than it is for a brand new puppy to learn immediately that they can't nip and bite.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure.
So why do puppies nip and bite? Because we've talked about it being normal, but what is it about the nipping and biting that the puppy is getting back from that activity?
Well, that'll vary depending on what their function is at that moment. If they are hurting because they're teething, then it might be that they just need some kind of relief by chewing or grabbing something. And a lot of puppies, if they're seeking comfort and they're also going through that stage, they'll want to be near their humans when they're doing it. Unfortunately, that means that that's going to be your body parts most likely that are involved
Definitely.
in that. It might be that that puppy is overtired and it's or feeling frustrated and it's like a reduction of stress and they're trying to bite down to reduce the stress. It might also mean that they're trying to initiate play with somebody. So they might come and use their mouth, and that's how they know how to initiate play with the dogs. And it might invoke a reaction, and we might, end up starting a lovely game of puppy biting dressing gown band on the
Belt.
floor. Yeah, so I think it has a lot of different functions. So it's trying to work out for your puppy in that scenario, what is the function of the bitey behavior that's happening.
Yes, because understanding the function will also understand how you need to respond in that moment. It's not necessarily a blanket response that we're going to have if your puppy's biting. Sometimes if they want to play, that's fine. But is that the way we want them to initiate play? Or do we want to teach them an alternative way of starting that game? So, which would be different if the dog is in pain. They're not going to want to play a game of tug if their teeth are hurting. So it's trying to understand in the moment what's, like you say, what the function of the behavior is, and then we can work out the best response for that time.
Yeah, and normally with a puppy, it's you can gauge that based on your routine, what part are you at of the day.
Yeah.
So obviously we talked already about what your day looks like to start with the sleep, the food, the play, the whatever. So if you kind of take a look at that, when's your puppy biting, then that should, if you're not sure, give you an indication as to what the function is based on the part of your routine you're at.
Like a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like a baby. They're what they are, aren't they? What they are.
Some of that is going to be process of elimination if you're not sure. So if you always go for the, if you assume that it's because the teeth hurt to start with so that you don't cause any pain, if you give them something cold to chew, you know, that's a, or to talk about those things anyway, and you alleviate the chance that it could be pain and they need cold and soothing, then fine, that's helped that. If it's because they're overtired, you know, that's next step might be just go and put them for a little bit of a nap. Is still creating a bit of a tiger, then maybe it is a tension I want to play, or I'm frustrated, I don't know what to do in this situation, and that's when we can start doing some games and better ways to come and greet. So always assume that it's a bitey pain and then work up from there.
I definitely agree. Okay, so let's go from that point then. If we think that the puppy is in pain, what options do we have? And sometimes you can see this because they'll have a chew or a toy and there might be a bit of blood on it. So you can tell that their teeth are actively moving. And they do go from, is it 28 teeth to 42 teeth or something? It's like a huge shift in the number of teeth that dogs have when they're teething. It's not quite the same as humans where it's like one for one. So there is a lot going on inside of their mouth.
And all at once, if we think about how long like spread is with human teeth falling out and through, it's like years, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Alice is 9 and she's still going through her like teething process.
Yeah. So like we get so much time for that one whistle.
One. Thankfully, because otherwise the tooth fairy would be very skin if they
we'd be rich kids.
And then you've got more teeth like dogs as well. Can you imagine? You'd be like, cha-ching, hello.
Yeah.
Teeth that comes through. But obviously your puppies, it's all happening pretty much within the space of like a few weeks. So you know, it's a lot all in one go. So there's loads of outlets that you can use. And I think one of the main things is to make sure that you've got lots of different textures and hardnesses of things.
Hardnesses. It's a great word.
Everyone and Oxford Dictionary, come on over.
Density, maybe.
How hard they are. How hard is your chew? So ones that we absolutely live by, things like frozen carrots, they are so cheap and they're fantastic. Yeah. You can just straight in the freezer. Don't worry about it if your dog doesn't finish it. Who cares? You can either like cook it up and give it them later or chuck it in the bin.
You were gonna say cook it up and have it for your dinner.
You can have it yourself.
Well, I had the tooth fairy come around and she was very expensive. So they're really, really great. And then you can also do things like freeze rope toys. You can soak them so they're nice and cold and offer them to your puppy, and that leaves a little bit less mess. Obviously, just be careful of your floors if you need to. Then lots of people use antlers as well. You can get split ones so they're softer inside. But again, a very different texture to a frozen carrot. So frozen carrot's got that crunch, whereas your antler really hasn't. You've got coffee root, olive wood. You've got Nyla bones, which to be honest, out of all of them, I would suggest the more natural ones over Nyla bones, to be honest, because they're sharp.
Yeah. And then, and then from 4 months, yaks chews everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in my house because my dogs eat them in about 10 minutes. So
that's key with any of these things. Obviously,
they're very expensive.
They are. You need to supervise your puppy in any of those things. introducing to them first. Because if you have a really, really hard chewer, then you might need to supervise how long you're leaving these down with your puppy for as well.
Okay. A good rule of thumb, and it's not one to live or die by, but if you can dig a nail into the chew or the bone or the whatever it is, that's going to be okay for your puppy's teeth. It's not a perfect rule of thumb, but it's one if you come across something you've not seen before. We don't want something that is rock hard that they can't, because that's going to put too much pressure on their teeth. So just being able to dig something into it, can thumbnail or something, can just give you that peace of mind. But whenever you give so any chew for the first time, always supervise. Even if it was like a stuffed Kong or something, always supervise and then see what's what with it.
Even cuddly toys. I feel like any
Yeah.
toy that a dog, I want to supervise them the first couple of times that they're using it, just to see. Because if they're ingesting things and de-stuffing them,
Yeah.
I'd want to know before leaving them on their own with things like that. So
Yeah, exactly. Before you come back to just an exploded toy and a very poorly dog.
yeah. And you
And
would get
just going
any.
back to just one thing I thought of, because some people who've not had a puppy before aren't really aware that, unlike a human child where the tooth falls out and you have that kind of gappiness for quite a while, with dogs it's more like that adult tooth pushes out the baby tooth. So often they don't have a gap in their mouth where you go, oh, you've lost some teeth. They might do for half a day or so, but that tooth comes in really quickly, and so you don't necessarily notice. And because they eat a lot of the baby teeth that fall out, or they kind of get lost, you're not necessarily going to see it like you see in a child. I mean, you can't be a wild dog and have no front teeth, like a child. So you're not necessarily going to notice it quite as much. So do be aware. And when we look at handling our puppies, we want to be able to look at their teeth, but if they're teething, their mouth will be sore and they might not be, that keen on you handling around. So just really gently checking every so often can be quite helpful. But it's something that a lot of people are quite surprised when I say, oh, I think they've got some adult teeth. And they were like, oh, didn't even know. So.
Yeah.
When you're checking, you can also give them like a say, like, say if you get like a bigger carrot, a fat one, ask them to take it. And then normally they'll open their mouth to take it. And then you can kind of check. So if they're not comfortable with you
Yeah.
touching, then there are ways around that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay, so my big one that I think is a real cause of nipping and biting in puppies, and it's my kind of go-to, is that the puppy is overtired and the puppy is not having enough sleep. And when they are overtired, they become a really persistent and insistent biting machine that is possibly the worst of all of the biting that you're going to experience.
It feels never ending and it
Yeah.
feels hard to console or to soothe.
Yeah.
And it's always at a time of day where you want to relax.
Yes, it really
Yeah,
is.
I mean, how many names are there for that time of night? I mean, I call it Emmerdale hour. People call it witching hour. People call it puppy hour. I don't know.
Yeah, zoomies.
Nightmare hour, hell
Yeah.
hour.
It's
I think early evening is, I would say, the most frequent time for people to have the issues. And I'm not fully sure that it's totally related to a specific thing in the dog's routine time of day. I think a lot of it added to that is that they're already tired from a buildup of not having enough sleep,
Yeah.
along with maybe being in a room that's usually out of bounds, human being on the floor, easy game, the telly's on, and there's lots of extra stimulation. It's like a buildup of things.
I also think that there is a owner element to it, and this is not criticism, this is just what I've seen, in that it's getting close to the puppy's bedtime and the new owner believes that they need to keep the puppy awake so that they will sleep all night. So they're very keen at that point to, and the dog then has this frenetic energy burst where they have their zoomies, they go around, they're biting on everything. And the owner goes, oh gosh, they've got so much energy. I must keep them awake until bedtime so that they will sleep all night. And actually, in that time, the puppy is overtired, frustrated, does have kind of pent-up energy, especially if they're not really walking. And it kind of, it's that horrible combination of a lot of different factors. Whereas actually, if they sleep all evening, they're probably more likely to sleep all night.
Yeah, that's it. And again, same with babies. If they've had a good night's
Yeah.
sleep, they relax the next day and they nap better the next day.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, like
You know the eyes that they make when they're just,
Oh
it's like a
God,
frenzy,
yes.
and it feels frenzied. And if you notice that they're, people will be like, it's like the devil's in them. And if you're saying that, or if someone's saying that to you, the most likely reason is they're just very, very tired puppies and they just need to go to sleep, and you just have to enforce that. Yeah, manage place in the pen, they do your routine, and that's that. They have to sleep. Yeah.
It is the joy of having a crate or a pen for the puppy, is that when they are really tired and quite bitey, but kind of fighting sleep, you can put them in there, give them something to calm themselves, a chew or a licky mutt or something like that to calm them down, and then hopefully that they'll sleep. But yeah, I definitely think that sleep, and also another time to think about putting a nap time in for the puppy is just before that school run if you have young kids, so that your puppy is waking up naturally in a really good state as the children come home, and then they're going to be less likely to bite the kids at that point as well.
Good idea. I think going back to the nighttime thing as well, I think people perhaps think that dogs have the same sleep patterns as we do. They assume that at nighttime, where we sleep a full like 7, 8 hour, if we're lucky, all the way through, that a dog is going to do exactly the same thing. And they sleep a lot, but they don't generally sleep a solid amount of time that is that long. They'll wake, they'll move, they'll settle. And they do that through the day as well. So it's kind of going with what your dog is comfortable and happy with, and getting as many of those little naps in as they can through the day, and just letting them let a sleeping dog lie.
Absolutely. Well, in humans, we're a really rare species in that we do one big block of sleep, and that is because we don't have very many predators. Whereas other animals, the more predators you have, the more you sleep, because you do little sleeps and wake up a lot because you need to check that you're okay. So I think it's like a dormouse sleeps the most because everything eats a dormouse. Bless them. And so dogs will sleep for the 24-hour period where they sleep and wake and sleep and wake, because they don't have the luxury of the human state that we have currently. So it is worth bearing in mind and thinking about when that sleep is going to work best for your routine.
And then having those sleep spaces that are really well tucked away, and we talked about introducing our puppy and making sure they have those spaces. But if your puppy is, you're putting your puppy down for a sleep, and it's in the kitchen, and people are coming through, or the kids come home, it's not going to be able to sleep, or if the cat's around. So, covering up a crate or having it in a space where there's no footfall of people, and letting them actually sleep with two eyes shut so that they can restful sleep, not just a quick nap, might be a bit of a game changer for people as well.
Definitely. And then what if their puppy really wants a game? So they're well rested. We're confident that their mouth doesn't hurt. We've ticked all the boxes. And actually, the puppy's like, I just really want some attention. Can we play a game, please? Thank you.
I remember when Walter was a puppy and I had soft toys stuffed in every pocket. I took one around with me. I had them on every sofa ledge. I had them everywhere so that if he wanted a game, I had something appropriate to try and play with. And don't get me wrong, he of course tried to go for my ankles or whatever I had on me every now and then. But if he played with that toy with me, the game continued. If he tried to play with my body, we didn't play. We tried to do something else. I might have some treats. I might ask him to do something else. I might scatter feed, and then I'd reintroduce him to the toy again. So by treating him, if he is biting at me, I'm just breaking that behavior as quickly as I can, so that gives me an opportunity to reset. If he got too wild, I would just step the other side of the baby gate for a second. Take a breath because it hurts. And then I would go back in with my toy immediately and be like, cool, I'm here. If we.
I think toys everywhere is the best piece of advice. It's instead of thinking, oh, I've forgotten my toy, just like you say, having them around rather than in one toy box, which might be the other side of the room, which will, if your puppy's biting at your ankles, will feel like a huge marathon distance to accomplish to get to the toy box so you can stop the
Climbing
puppy
across
biting.
the
Yeah, exactly. But having them everywhere, and I'm a really big fan of really long tug toys as well, so that your hand and their mouth can be as far away from one another as possible. And if your puppy finds themselves biting up the toy, you can grab the other end of it, and it's like a constant switch around. And you can make those just with some fleece from like a haberdashery that you plait, really loose plait, so their teeth don't get caught in it. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Probably costs £1. Make a few of those, have them around, dead easy.
Yeah, I think that's something to think about actually, isn't it? A lot of puppy toys are very small because puppies are small. You're right, like you're trying to play with a toy the size of your hand, and that's not much room for error there, is there really?
No, when you get launching as well.
And puppies don't have great proprioception. They don't know what they're biting a lot of the time. They just open their mouth and hope for the best, and that is often onto you. So yeah, I'm a big fan of really long, that like comedically long toys that is much easier to manage and handle and not be bitten.
The other part of that as well is that if you're, we make this mistake quite a lot as people when we've had a history of being nipped by puppy fingers, it will come in with that toy and we'll launch our hand away so that we try and nip, and then the puppy goes, oh, hold on, like I'm gonna have to work harder to grab it because it's move away next time. And then it's just this battle of grabbing and grabbing and pulling away and launching. So if you've got that toy there and you're not launching it back, the puppy's less likely to urgently try and jump and grab.
Exactly. And you can also have, you can be sat on the sofa because I'm quite lazy. You can be sat on the sofa and the toy reaches the floor, and that's easier. Just for
Or even
me.
a little lightweight flirt pole, just a little gentle one. That's
Yeah.
the as well.
Like a little cat flirt pole.
Yeah, exactly. I like them. They're cute.
Yeah. So if the puppy, because a thing that I hear a lot from my clients is you've got a puppy, they're biting at you. And then you produce a toy and then you start playing with the toy. Are we not reinforcing the biting behavior at that moment, saying, okay, if you bite me, then we play a game? And does that not then go to initiate a game? I have to bite you first, and then you'll go and find me a fun toy and we'll play.
So the tug toy game is not going to create biting because the biting is happening anyway. It is a stage. It is going to happen regardless of whether you're, whatever you're doing as a reaction. But what we can do is we can teach some kind of self-control things alongside playing those games as well. So it can help all sides of trying to help that puppy. But your puppy needs an appropriate outlet, and rather than you trying to stop or do anything else that your puppy doesn't want as a reinforcement, so maybe getting treats isn't reinforcing for your puppy in that moment, and then maybe you fussing your dog and touching your dog's not reinforcing for them. It'll probably do the opposite if they're a bit bitey at that moment. If you get their teeth into something, at least then it's not going to be in your arms. So it's an appropriate direction, redirection than to on your arm. So actually it's a better option. And then after that, you can then ask them to do something else and maybe switch them over to that side of the brain that's a little bit calmer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like you say, the biting's happening regardless. So if we can teach them that actually biting on something soft is nicer than biting on our arm, it's an easier win for us, isn't it, then?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
We love to baby tug or puppy tug or whatever you want to call it, where you basically just do teeny tug. The puppy, I mean, hardly even wins, if you like. And then we're like, oh my goodness, did it. And then they'll come back to you like with the toy in their mouth, like, wow, I did it, can I play again? So I just won. So like puppy and baby tug is like the best thing ever, because then you can take that toy, they'll pull away again, you let them win, and then they're more likely to come to you with a toy in their mouth because you're starting to build up this reinforcement history. But they come to you with this thing in their mouth and then they feel good about it because they get a game and they get that lovely, dopamine hit of woohoo, I'm the best thing ever and Absolutely. And I don't know what whether your experience is the same, but we work with probably more gun dogs than anything, and I always personally find that gun dog breeds are the most bitey mouthy, and possibly a combination of energy and also wanting to have things in their mouth because they're bred to do so. So actually using a retrieve with a puppy from a very, very young age, not hardcore ball throwing, not throwing things really far away, but literally a gentle, okay, your toy's oh, go get your toy. Put a name on that toy and encourage them to bring it back to you. It can really help with the bitey behavior because they're finding a more appropriate way to interact with you that's easy for them because it's heavily bred into them.
I definitely think if you've got a dog, like a terrier as well, that just loves to have things in their mouths, you use that drive that they already have and but kind of manipulate it a little bit more for your purposes rather than for what they want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying that, do we have any specific ways that we might deal with specific breeds? So like a border collie who's very nippy as a breed trait, or a terrier who just really likes to get hold of things and rag them. Do we have any specific tips for certain breeds that will work better maybe for a Labrador than they would for a collie, or a collie versus a Jack Russell?
I think it depends on the age that we're looking at of the
Okay.
puppy, because a lot of these kind of breed traits will start coming in at later stages of that puppyhood as well. So you'd treat them all the same as in you do a, exchange or swap with something else where you can. I think it depends if some of the behaviors you're seeing, like with your collies, I think the herding behavior is coming quite
Yeah.
early. So yeah, what you might do is you might start teaching some toy differentiation so you can get them, herding them, bringing those toys in. That's one of our favorites for our border collies as well, so that they're not coming in and nipping for other reasons. I think with your terriers, it's anything fluffy and lacy that they, looks like a soft, fluffy thing for them to go and chase and grab is more exciting for them. So you might find an appropriate toy that you can, slide across the floor and get them to chase a little bit. With
Yeah.
your gun dogs, retrieving is more natural for them. So I would always definitely go for a retrieve first with like a soft cushion pillow thing and more related to them. And what about you?
I really like the idea of having, especially for collies, if they're trying to nip ankles, having some kind of cord that's away from you. So something is still going across the floor. So if they feel that they want to bite onto something, A, it's not directly on you, but they still get that outlet. They still get to kind of like nip and get that toy. So the length of, say, like a dressing gown cord, everyone's got one of those.
Yeah.
Attach that, you kind of drag it really far behind you, you have a couple of them, or you can out to the side so your puppy gets that lovely outlet. And then whenever they come near you, we're not getting any of that biting. Then what have we got? We've got our hounds.
That
Yeah,
work.
no. Nose. Yeah,
Nose
absolutely.
working.
Yeah, same with you, terriers, to be
Yeah.
honest. Like one of my fave games for young terriers, especially going through adolescence as well, is to keep them inside, go outside and hide loads of like pasty things or fluffy things all around the outside of your garden and just send them out to go and get them and
Yeah.
then play those sorts of games. So it's not even necessarily addressing biting and nipping in the moment it's happening. We of course need to do that, but if we can look at how we can fulfill a lot of the things within that breed and within that individual puppy, we'll see a reduction in the biting and nipping anyway, especially if it's coming from boredom, frustration, or trying to get attention.
Exactly. And it's a nice way to teach them to, how to get your attention, but in a better way, and then you'll do something that they really enjoy, and you can do that together as well. I also think with dogs like a border collie, if you've got young kids running around, that collie is going to want to herd them up. Like, so A, is that the right breed of dog for you? Maybe it is. That's absolutely fine. I'm not saying it isn't, but you're going to have to use some environmental management in that as well. If you've got three kids running around, that collie is instinctively going to want to nip and round them up. So,
Yeah.
are those kids going to be able to listen to instruction to prevent that behavior happening? So, it's thinking about how we can manage the environment as well to make sure that we get the best out of our dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, baby gates are
Baby gates.
honestly on our list for everybody when they're getting puppies.
I do wonder if the pet industry supports the baby gate industry more than new parents sometimes.
Probably,
Yeah.
yeah.
I definitely think we prop up the Premier industry. I don't think enough people
You do definitely,
Premier.
don't you?
A
Oh my God.
hundred percent. Whenever I
Oh.
buy it, I really think that dog trainers buy more of this than people who have it on toast.
I can't imagine eating it myself, actually, because
I
for
think
me,
I.
it's a treat now.
Oh, okay.
I do think it's a dog treat in my head. It's well, I don't think it's got anything edible in it, but it's just
No.
manufactured
Like the liquid
food.
equivalent of eating gravy bones or something,
Yeah,
right?
it doesn't look like food to me.
No,
Mm-hmm.
definitely for dogs, in my opinion. But I agree.
Yeah. I wanted to just circle back quickly to attention behavior. So if you think your puppy is trying to get some attention to play or maybe they're bored or I don't know, you've just come home. It's really good ideas to try and help your dog to, from a very young age, learn how to settle and know that nothing is expected or available for them as reinforcement at certain times. Because I think I really love this notion of we expect our dogs to focus on us and engage with us all of the time when we're doing training, but then when they start to do it when we don't want it, we find it really annoying. So it's teaching your puppy, okay, like here's engagement time and here's like you this is not a time to engage with me. So they know do down time and that you're setting your expectations correctly, and setting them up for it as well.
So true. And on that note, it's also when puppies bite you, you obviously notice it, but all the time that they're not doing that, sometimes we miss choosing to engage with our puppies when they are doing the things that we really like because they aren't asking for that attention. And it's really, really hard to dismiss when they're biting you because it really bloody hurts. So capturing them doing behaviors you like. So for instance, if they're just looking at you, that's your time to engage in play, or that's your time to engage in something. And then your dog's going, oh, I see. I do this.
That's how we
And like,
get it. I do think that people go down that I'm going to ignore the biting, but they don't do the other side of it, which is reward the dog for not biting. So, yes, ignore the biting if you can, move out of the way, I had one client who wore wellies in the house to because the they had a border terrier and it did really hurt. And so they could ignore the biting of the ankles at that point because they'd managed it. But then we worked really heavily on what can we reward instead. The puppy wants attention. Let's find ways that that puppy can give us attention that isn't using the teeth. And it's that balance between the two sides of it that's really important. If you just ignore everything, including the biting, that's not going to help you. You have to go, actually, when they bring me a toy, no matter what I'm doing, I'm going to engage with it, or whatever that puppy might offer.
It's easy to like put that to the side and forget about it because you kind of want this easy existence when you come home from work where you just don't have to think so much. So I think maybe trying to keep it in the forefront of your mind, a really good thing to do is to write a list. I love lists. Write a list of all the things that you think are really good things that you want to see from your puppy. So your puppy chooses to settle, your puppy gives you eye contact, your puppy goes to pick up a toy on their own, your puppy walks loosely on their lead in the garden for like 2 seconds. Like all these things that you find like really valuable and desirable. And then if they're at the forefront of your brain, you'll start to notice them more because that you're conscious of them.
Yeah, definitely.
Reward with, it doesn't have to be with treats because again, if you've got a dog that's relaxing, sometimes grabbing a treat out might be a bit, overexciting for them. But appropriately rewarding them or letting them know that they're doing the right thing and capturing all of those things that you really want to see.
Absolutely. And having little rules, like my rule in our house when we got Stan was we have like an open plan kitchen area and then a lounge. And in the lounge, we only sit there late on an evening and watch TV or if there's sport on. But when we sit in there, generally only to watch telly and quite not very much, very rarely throughout the day. So whenever we sit in there, the dogs don't get any attention. So our lounge is for lounging. When we're in there, the expectation is we relax. And all my play and training happened in the kitchen. And obviously I'm lucky because I have those two spaces that are big enough and not everyone has it. But you can set up expectations for the puppy that when we do X, then you can have attention. Or if I sit down in here at 9 o'clock at night, there's not nothing's happening. I'm not engaging in play. You can have chew toys and you can have things that you can do on your own, but I'm not available to you right now because I'm done for the day and I need to sit and chill for a bit. So you can set little rules around that. It could even be if I sit on the sofa, then I'm not engaging. If I sit on the floor, then we can engage. It can be really basic little changes, but that set the puppy's expectations quite early on that will really help them self-manage as they go forwards.
And certainly for most people, I think it is the living room is a trigger space where the TV is and sofas is a trigger space for puppies. And it's again, it's making sure that you set your expectations, but you also show your puppy how to do that. So for some puppies, they'll learn quite quickly if you're consistent that if you're not giving them, attention or whatever in that space, that they'll self-settle, but some puppies won't. So it's perhaps helping them self-manage by, you know, walking them in on a lead into that space after they've done the toilet, after they've done their play, and you put their settled mat on the floor because you've been doing your mat training, and you give them a chew on their mat, and you can't sit very calmly with them. You set up what you want to see. And then, you know, if you're getting any crazy silliness or it's not working, you come out and you give them just a little bit of chill time outside of that space, and then you try again, and you, you know, you're really clear with that puppy, because it's not like freedom is not a happier puppy, clarity is a happier puppy.
Consistency. And they're not very good at shades of grey. They do need to be quite black and white. And that's okay. It's okay for them to be black and white at that point, where yes or no is the only two options available at that time.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it makes it easier as the like guardian as well, because there's so much to think about. And if you've got your rules and you stick to them, then it's easier for you as well.
And it's easier for kids in the house as well. You know, it's easier for everyone. So I know that when we look on kind of Facebook and stuff like that, people will often ask for help with a nipping and biting puppy. And within the advice that is given underneath from, I'm sure, well-meaning people, there's a lot of put some coins in a empty bottle and shake it at them, or put vinegar in a bottle and spray it, or use your water spray, or use your pet corrector, or use your training discs, or just hit them on the head before giving them a chew to work on. Now,
Just say no.
Just say no to everything. No, don't chew that. No, don't bite me. No, don't pull on the lead. No, don't run away. The universe. So obviously people who've listened to us will understand that this is maybe not our advice. But what are the pitfalls of people using kind of these aversive methods for nipping and biting in our puppies? What could the potential fallout of those things be?
Let's just go for all of it. If your puppy is learning to build their confidence and interact with items or us, and we use something that's really scary to stop them, like a really loud bang or a noise, or we physically hurt them or even just shock them through our, you know, hit them on the nose or whatever, then that's really going to break down their trust in not only us, but also can make them sensitive to noise, which later on in your life is going to cause you
a lot of issues.
When we think about fireworks, traffic, general house noises, literally anything. If you get a noise sensitive dog, it's really hard to build that back up again. And also it can make them quite pessimistic about objects and exploration. And that can be really damaging for their confidence going forwards, especially when they hit their teenage years, when they really start to say to themselves, is this safe, is this not safe? And they're going to start to see the world in quite a pessimistic light of, well, it can't be safe, because if I go and try and explore new things, then bad things are going to happen, so I just won't. And ultimately that doesn't make a happy dog or a happy puppy, does it? You're causing yourself issues later on there.
I think the pitfall is that people don't always see what the exact association the dog is going to have with that character. And we see it again. I'm going slightly off topic, but if a dog's
off topic.
It's just one of my biggest stressors is dogs that are dog reactive and people yanking their neck or doing the leash tug and stopping them. And that dog within that 2 seconds, 2 second rule, is seeing that other dog and feeling pain on the neck. And it's a direct association. And it's, you know, the same with the pet sprays. So pet sprays, if your puppy is chewing something, grabbing something, or grabbing onto you or mouthing you, and you spray them in the face, you know, it's like a direct association with you are causing pain to that dog when they approach you. So how hard is it going to be when you start trying to recall your dog to come into your space, get proximity from them, when they've learned that coming near you is scary? Like, that's not a conversation you want to have with a young puppy. You want a positive association with coming close to your human, and you recall is one of your top things you want to go.
I think what we have to remember is that this puppy chewing and biting is going to happen in the first couple of months that we have our pups. And in that time, they are just getting to know you. They don't know that 99% of the time you're a lovely human being who wouldn't ever think about hurting a dog. But if you've read or been advised whatever, to create a scary aversive, whether that's a noise aversive, a pain aversive, whatever it might be, you're immediately undoing a lot of that hard work of the puppy snuggling, cuddling bit that you actually wanted to do. The puppy doesn't know that you would never hurt a fly normally.
Yeah.
And also, if we look at the chewing or, you know, of objects or furniture or whatever that might be, if you catch your puppy chewing and they have that need, say the outlets, they've chosen not to have the outlets that are available or whatever the reason is, but you catch them doing it and you chastise them for that, if they feel the need to do that again, they're going to do that again where you can't see them.
Yeah.
That can be really dangerous. And that's when you start seeing them go behind things. And then there's cables there and there's electricity or there's, you know, or it might be your grandma's curtains that you really love in the other room, like whatever it is. They're going to start hiding from you because you've become a scary person that they can't do this really natural outlet around. And I think that's a really, you know, sad spot to put your puppy in. I think you should be the person to go to and be like, ow, I hurt. Or
please, can you help me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're kind of doing it when your puppy's like been chewing on something or been biting on something, and you come in and you catch them having done it, and your natural reaction is frustration, and you go, "What on earth are you doing? Stop!"
Yeah,
you're literally just an unpredictable, shouty, scary. Yeah. Like they'll have no association between, oh, I'm chewing on anything that is human furniture is a thing that I'm being told off for. Like they won't know that that is an association. They won't learn from it. All they'll learn is that you are not a predictable person and they can't trust you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's I think if you're going to have a puppy in your house, they're going to chew stuff. They're going to chew skating boards. They're going to chew the sofa. They're going to chew you. They're going to bite you. They're going to nip you. And that is part of the deal that we make when we take on board a puppy into our homes.
Can we just touch on advice given to do things that other dogs would do if your puppy
interesting. Yeah. Yes, let's.
Shall we talk about that?
Yeah, let's.
So things that we have heard or have had clients do.
Okay.
So the biggest one that you hear a lot is if your puppy bites you, you yelp.
Yes.
Should get them to let go.
Love that one.
In my experience, that makes them come back and bite you even
harder. Terriers love it. They're like, yes!
Well, fun.
Yeah. You're going to bite harder.
Yeah. It's, and don't get me wrong, it's really hard to do because it's something that I used to advise to do. Yeah. Definitely. And it's something that I can't help but do because when it hurts, I go,
you're bleeding.
Exactly. So I think, as long as you're not trying to chastise your dog with that and that you're trying your best to go.
Yeah.
Toy, I understand that it's really hard because if you're hurting, you're going to make a noise. However, go on to the next phase, please, because this is the one that is.
Which one I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
If your puppy bites you, you need to bite them back so that they know that it hurts and to stop doing it.
How hard can you bite a dog?
Why would you
I
bite
don't know
a
how
dog?
Sharp my
teeth. I haven't got my teeth are not sharp. Like I'd have to bite, like,
and why
get through that fur.
Anywhere near those teeth. I mean, let alone not biting your dog because it makes no sense whatsoever. But like if they're biting you and it hurts, why would you put your face next to them?
Mm. Where are you supposed to bite them? On the scruff? On their face? On the ear?
Having never given that advice, I've never been sure.
I haven't tried it. Really, it's not been in my repertoire of skills to do with dogs, but
no, it's not one. I have heard it, but I've not. I don't know anyone who's tried it. I think mostly
even the hand. I think more people, more so than the mouth. I think a lot of people, it's like you roll your dog and you pin them, like a dog would, which they dogs have quite a high tolerance of very small puppies anyway because they know they're learning.
Yeah,
it's the pinning the dog down, and it's. I think that again, just you're human. You're not a dog. You can't. No. You can't communicate that way.
I really think that we need to get out of this mindset. Not us, because we're not in it, but like general mindset that we are in any way a canine.
Yeah,
we are not dogs.
No, 100%.
We're not going to. Even if they were in a dominance hierarchy, we wouldn't be part of it.
We're not in it. Yeah,
we're not. We're not. We're not there. We're not. We're not one of them.
We're a different species.
You know? I'm quite happy not being one of them. I quite like chocolate too much to be a dog.
Yeah, suck.
Yeah, I think that what we need to get out of the mindset is that we are in any way part of the dog kingdom, and that we can act like them and they will respond in the same way as if we were their mum.
Yes, 100%. And you know, like other dogs with puppies, I don't advise that they have to do the work of teaching them to stop biting, but other dogs do communicate really well with the puppies when they bite too hard. But they're dogs and they understand that. But us responding in the same way is just going to
The
confuse them and
best
they'll bite
way
back.
that a lot of a mum dogs will respond if the puppy bites too hard is they will remove themselves from the situation, and that is the only thing that we should really be doing, is
Yeah, or
taking
you
ourselves away.
when we're at, like at the daycare, so the dog daycare we used to work there, if you introduce a puppy into that pack, they'll sniff their bums or their like private areas, and they'll mostly ignore, or they'll kind of amuse the puppy and play with them a little bit, and then when they've done is they'll just turn a chin, they'll turn and they'll walk in. It's that's their, you know, I finished playing with you because you're too rough or because I've decided not to anymore.
I'm not going to sniff the bum or the private parts of a puppy, though, to find out what I need to do.
Are you telling me you've never sniffed a dog's bum? Come
No.
on. Not
Pause. Yes.
if you're
Bum. No.
trained one. Oh.
I'm so glad it's that way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine going into somebody's house as like a professional dog trainer. Just
Yeah.
bear with me. I'm
Yeah.
just going to have a sniff.
I learn a lot from you.
Now your dog's going to know that I'm stopping.
I
Yeah.
mean, I've heard some horror stories of dog trainers going into people's houses. I've not come across that one yet, but
Okay.
maybe it's
But
on
I
their
mean, the way that this industry's been going, I wouldn't be
aggressive.
surprised if it
There's
started
still
soon.
time.
So there's time.
Yeah. I've got to hope not.
One of the most mental ones I ever heard was for a dog who had no recall, and they had a chain dog trainer in, and they were told when they went out on a walk they had to take a rucksack full of water balloons. Is it water balloons? And every time their dog didn't respond to them, they had to throw one of these water balloons at their dog so it would like explode water all over them. And I just said, what happened when you ran out of what happened when you ran out of balloons? They were
That's
like,
so. I
that
would
is
like if someone in a rucksack in a field started throwing water balloons at me, I feel like I would not approach them. I feel like I'd probably run if I try and catch them.
I've heard some absolute mental pieces of advice in my time doing this job, but that I have to say was up there with one of the most batshit crazy ideas I've ever heard from a dog trainer.
Like, I know there's no science in it, but what is there? What genuinely, what is the science? What's the
The rationale was that if the dog ignored you, they had to be punished. And obviously, because they were doing recall and obviously hadn't heard of a long line or any kind of like management technique, they were just to throw a I think this was before this was, I mean, we're going back a few years. This was before e-collars were more of a thing than they are now, unfortunately. And this was their punisher at a distance. It honestly, can you imagine? Right, I'm just gonna go for a walk, fill up 50 water balloons, tie them all up, put them in my rucksack, weigh myself down, off we go, unclip the dog, Fido come, lob a balloon. What?
is someone's paid for that advice, and that's the thing that makes me so sad.
That's
Because
the bit that really gets on my go more than
yeah, but can you imagine like
what?
being the person whose dog that is in the field, and that person has told you to put a rucksack of balloons on your back? Can you imagine? You'd be like, I've just paid you like £200 for this, but I'm gonna do it anyway because you've said, and then they're filming you and then they're putting it on their social media, and then oh, just
Recall
imagine.
whisperer.
Oh, there's a lot to unpick there, isn't there?
Oh goodness, I feel like we could do a whole episode on that.
Oh, we should do a whole episode of batshit
And
crazy dog
like
training
terrible
advice.
dog. Oh my god, let's write. Add that to the list.
Add
Oh my
that
god.
to the list, because I've got loads of examples. That's top of my list though. So I've given it away.
Oh
But yeah, awesome.
wow. That's awful. Should we finish this then? Should we finish the
Yeah, okay,
bite
sorry.
thing? Yeah.
Off topic, us. Shocker.
Our dog t-shirt game.
The t-shirt game. Yeah. Can we talk about the t-shirt
You
game?
can tell me all about the t-shirt game.
It's not really a game, it's just a t-shirt, but
The
everything.
magic t-shirt.
Yeah, we so this is I feel like it's not ads. I feel like I got this from Sarah Fisher a very, very long time ago. I feel like
Okay.
this was one of hers for her adolescent dog she was working with at a seminar. And what she suggested was when if you have an adolescent dog who is still going through their bitey stage, past their puppy stage, in particularly grabbing clothes, mouthing arms and stuff when, especially when you're entering the house, it's like I can't control myself. I just need to be near you, and this is the only way I've figured out how to do it. And I've perhaps missed some of those, some of that work on impulse control. Is that you, if your dog wants to be close to you, close to your smells, close to your body, and they like to grab the items on your body, and they're not interacting with any of the toys that you've got instead, that you start to do this thing where you take a t-shirt from home with you when you go out for work, you can wear it in the car journey on the way home, and then when you get it out for your dog and the dog approaches you, you can play, if it's an old thing that you'll have to have, old tea towel, doesn't have to be a t-shirt. And that you can interact with them instead. You're not encouraging it, but you're giving them an alternative outlet that's safer for you, and it teaches them better behaviors. And you can start doing games like playing tuggy, or you can throw the tea towel out and get retrieves out of them. And we've just found that a really good game for, I mean, I think it's more so retrievers and labradors that we've done it with, reduce that instant at the door on you. Actually, over time, if you do it quite a lot, they'll just start to reduce their stress because they get the outlet, and it's not you coming in the door going out, at me, up. It starts stressful experience at the door. So it's a good measure for like a temporary fix while you try and work on some of those other behaviors and things you do want to see as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think looking for what your dog wants from you at that time can be really helpful. And if you have got a gun dog, they do love to have things in their mouth. So I used to have a golden retriever, and we used to keep receipts in our car. So when we got out of the car, she would carry a piece of paper in for us. She used to love it. Like, just so, such a simple little thing, like parking ticket, not parking ticket. Like, obviously, I'm too good to get a parking ticket. I'm too well behaved.
One a day.
What's the what? You know what? But not like a parking fine ticket, like a receipt from a car park ticket, that kind of thing. But it was because she just loved to carry things in. So if you've got a dog that loves that kind of thing, you can use the t-shirt, or you can just have toys around that you can just quickly pop in their mouth. But a lot of Labradors, when I used to be a dog walker, you go into a house with a lab in, and they're like, "Oh, hi. Oh my God, I just have to, let me just find you a, I can't find something." And they like run around frantically looking for something that they can bring you.
So our family retriever, he's not with us anymore, sadly, but when he was tiny, he was, oh my God, super bitey, like beyond bitey. And one of the things we did by accident taught him was that he had his favorite toy in the world, who was, very creatively called Teddy, this little pink Teddy.
Went all out there.
Yeah, and he just got into a habit of every single time we or anyone came in the door, we'd do, "Where's Pink Teddy? Oh my God." Loads of emotion and loads of focus on that single one toy that is always out and predictably out in the house. And then he goes and looks for it because he's a retriever, and he's like, "Oh, hang on, your
I
boss
love this.
told me this is my job." Yeah. And he brings it, and then he gets that like cool interaction at the door that he really wants. So it's not chastising, it's creating a pattern of events. And even if I mean, I quite like this, is that we've been listening to a lot of Hannah Brannigan. She's fabulous. But a lot of this shaping stuff where we're talking about the things that trigger your dog and trying to get to the thing they want, and then you shape the behavior in the middle. So it's even if your dog is constantly jumping up at you, it's like it will naturally extinct because you just go walk past them and you go, "Where's the toy? Where is it? Oh my God, where is it?" Not focusing on the jumping itself, you're actually focusing on the game. And so it becomes a pattern. And then next time you come in, they'll go, "You've come through the door. Let me go find the pink teddy." Got
Yeah,
it.
exactly. And then you've got something that you can really reinforce then as well. Well, I think we've covered everything that there possibly is to cover on nipping and biting today
And more.
and more. Let us rope
Oh,
you extra bits in along the
signatures
way.
and I think that's
Yeah,
the most
design.
important thing. I mean, it resurges maybe when the back teeth come in. So just be prepared for that. But talk about that in our adolescence
Yes,
things.
because we're going to come back and do another series all about adolescence and all of the stuff that we've talked about. We're probably going to talk about it again, but just in a slightly different way.
But it does end. And also, if you do at any point feel like you just don't like your puppy because they're biting you and it hurts, that's actually okay. Like, don't feel guilty about that.
Yeah, it is the biggest downside of the puppy lifestyle, isn't it? That it does hurt, and it does feel incessant, and it feels like it's never ending. But hopefully in this podcast we've given you loads of tips of how we can manage it, how we can manage the environment, that how important sleep is, that they might be in pain, and so we need to factor that in, and that you can use your breed's identity to really reinforce certain behaviors that are maybe little bit nicer than nipping and biting.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
We'll see you in a fortnight.
Yes, we'll do. Bye.
Bye.